Okay, the reason why you would keep your palm leaves is because that's what you burn up to make your ash for Ash Wednesday.
Yeah.
Oh.
Just so you didn't know. I never knew that before. I worked closely with my Roman Catholic colleague. And do you know what else they add to the palm leaves? They add some little bit of olive oil, because the trick of anointing people on palm on Ash Wednesday, you've got to make the ash stick. And so if you add a little bit of olive oil to the ash, it makes sure it sticks. The things you learn when you work with a Roman Catholic priest. All great fun, isn't it? But since I didn't know that, I just showing you how much I do know, and I thought I'd share my ignorance. Okay, I hope you've been enjoying this series of messages I've preached from the book of James. I've already turned it on. It is working. James wrote this letter almost 2,000 years ago to the churches of his day. Surprise, surprise. I hope you've found that this message is timeless and it has impact for us here in 2024. Now, you might notice, if you look at the book of James, that we're almost to the end. I've only got one more message left in the book of James. Now, I'm silly enough to even ask that if you've got some suggestions of what you want me to preach of after I finish this book of James, let me know. Because I don't want to scratch where you're not itching, as I said to Gary this morning. Otherwise, you'll have to put up with what I think God was telling me that you need to know. Go figure. Now, as James draws to the end of his letter, he touches a few of the themes he's already dealt with. But it seems to me that he's also trying to spell out the high points of what it means to live by faith. James is trying to tell us that if we are serious about understanding what Easter's all about and the implications of Easter, and if we're fair dinkum about allowing God to show us where our lives are failing to measure up, he says these three areas are where you've got to start. What you do is where we start. James is saying to us, watch your actions. Now, if you look at the heading for when when we had the Bible reading, and if you thought about that first part of this chapter, when I read it, I couldn't quite decide whether the people in the congregation were all rich, or whether they were all poor, or whether it was a mixture of both. Do you consider yourself rich or poor? Well, it's all about who you compare yourself with, isn't it? For those people who are on their way to India, you are going to appear very rich compared with most of the people that you might see on the streets of India. And it seems to me that this first section is addressed to rich people in the congregation of the church. Otherwise, why would he bother? He does not paint them in a very good light, does he? And whether we like it or not, being born here in Australia, or having moved here to Australia, we are considered rich by world standards. But that's not quite what James is criticising. He's more interested in our actions, how we use our wealth, how we get more wealth. In fact, whether we're guilty of amassing that wealth by ripping off other people, by preying on other people's generosity or their lack, exploiting the poor and the vulnerable. Now, of course, we would never do that, would we? Now, if we haven't paid the people that work for us a fair wage, yeah, well, James was saying, well, yeah, you're guilty. If we insensitively try to get the best deal possible while we live in luxury, while the worker in China who put in his blood, sweat and tears into making it, who still can't afford to feed his family, then we are guilty in what James is trying to say here, because we have effectively ripped off that pearl piece person in China, not to speak of all the other people that might have ripped him off on those in-between steps. James says, if that's the case, we should weep because we are guilty and we will be judged accordingly. I think the sad thing is that we sometimes do that without even thinking about it. We're just thinking, well, we just got to be good stewards of our limited resources. Therefore, we need to get the best deal that we can. But it seems to me that we've got to think a bit bigger than that. We might not be able to control international politics, which have a hand to play in making those sort of inequalities happen. But we need to be aware of even if we are partly to blame. Because it's no secret that history gives all too many examples of where Christians have exploited the poor for their own benefit. And the quote that came to my mind as I thought about that is, all it takes for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. We need to be aware of that inequality within the world today, and so be prepared to watch our actions and change them if we feel that we are failing in James's test here. The other quote that came to mind is from Martin Niemöller, a Lutheran pastor during World War II, who wrote this: first they came for the socialists. Oh, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionist. Well, I didn't speak up. You know, I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews. Well, I didn't speak up. I wasn't a Jew. And then they came for me. There was no one left to speak up for me. If we look at the world today, there are so many places where there is just abject poverty, starvation, lack of basic resources of food and water and housing. And if we are content to just sit within our luxury enclave here in Australia and take for granted that this is what we deserve, then we have failed the test that James is trying to paint for us. So, would we speak up if we saw injustice? Would we challenge the system if we see poor people being ripped off? What you would do? Would you do if you saw the arrogant rich people failing to pay a due to the people who work for them? Well, they're very important questions we need to ask ourselves, because it's not about what we think, it's about what we do, how we live our lives in practice. But where do our actions come from? Well, they come from our attitudes, don't they? Our attitudes inform our actions. In many respects, if the first section was directed to the rich, maybe this section was directed to the poor. He doesn't say, to the poor people. You should pray so that, and pray that I would make you rich. No, he doesn't say that, does he? But he calls for those who are poor to just be patient in their suffering, to stay strong and steady, to keep your balance as you wait for the Lord's return. He calls them to be patient. How patient are you?
Not good.
You know, when you get to the line in Woolworths, do you think, oh, how come there's too many people here? There's too many. Look, there's all these places that are not being opened. You know, why do I have to wait in such a long line? Why do I have to do it myself now when I used to have a checkout chick that did this for me? Well, how patient are you? James says, look at the farmer. Here in New South Wales, in the central west where I used to live, they sow their wheat, barley, oats, and other bits and pieces. What time of the year? Where are the farmers in this group?
Early.
Usually somewhere around March or April. As long as there's enough rain, as long as there's enough moisture in the soil. And some years gets to the point where it's got too late. They never got enough moisture. They couldn't even put in a crop. And they have to patiently wait till next year. But if they sow their crop in March or April, how long do they have to wait before they get the header out? Actually, most of the time in December. They invest hundreds of thousands of dollars to sow it. They spray it. They watch it. They pray for rain. They wait till it's mature, ripe, ready. And only then do they harvest it. Do you have that level of patience? Now, I've also watched all too many farmers suffer as the crop initially looked good, shrivels on the ground, dies because of not enough rain. And those that, you know, have this opportunity, you know, can put the sheep on it, some of the farmers that I work with would just shrug their shoulders and say, no, it's just how it is. Yeah. Sheep will get a good meal off that for a few weeks. And yes, they know all about suffering patiently. Even when we, the ultimate consumers here, don't even realise it. Why? Well, often when the farmers on this side of the country have really poor crop and it downgrades their wheat and it's only good for, you know, stock feed, the other half of the country has had a bumper crop and we still get our bread. We don't even know that actually this wheat actually came from Geraldton in Western Australia rather than, you know, up the road there at Bathurst or Orange or Wellington. So, what are we patiently waiting for? Why are we called to patiently stand firm? James says, because the Lord's return is near. Do you see those around you being patient? When nothing goes to plan, when the wheels continue to fall off, when it seems everybody's against you. Well, I'm not sure I can always adopt that attitude. There are all too many times when I become negative, grumpy about my plight, and dump it on anybody and everybody that happens to be around. James says, stop. Refuse to grumble about each other. Stop whining. Stop blaming each other. Look out He says, if this is your attitude, you will be judged. My response is, well, but what can I do about it? And James's answer is, go back to basics. Go back to the scriptures. Because I think we've got lazy in our generation as well. We know we should read the Bible more often, but we just don't seem to get round to it. We're too busy to discipline ourselves to read it every day. Because if we do that, then my experience is that God gives me just what I need. Sometimes a word of encouragement. Sometimes a kick up the rear end. Sometimes a call that I'm be patient. Sometimes a call that don't just sit there, do something. As I was thinking of a good example of this from my readings recently, this passage in Jeremiah is the one that that came to mind. And Jeremiah was just at the beginnings of his ministry. And Jeremiah is saying to the Lord, Lord, Master God, look at me. I don't know anything. I'm just a young lad. I haven't got the experience to be a great prophet. And God says, don't say, I'm just a boy. I will tell you where you should go and what you should do. I will tell you what you should say. Don't be afraid. I'll be right there looking after you. Why? He says, because I shaped you in the womb. I knew all about you before you were even born. I had holy plans for you, that you would be a prophet to the nations. That's what I had in mind for you. Before you were even born. What a great encouragement. As Jeremiah thinks, Lord, what am I doing here? I just feel incapable of doing what you've called me to. And yet he accepted God's call and did that job. But a little bit further on, he recognises that it's not always going to be easy what God calls him to do. And over in chapter 12, verses 5 and 6, he says this. He's been complaining about the lot that God served up to him. If I can find the right place, I'll be able to read it to you. Oh, there it is, 5 and 6. And God responds and says, so, Jeremiah, if you're worn out racing against men, what makes you think you can race against the horses? Meaning, I've got your plan for a race up against some horses. Don't whinge about running with men. And if you can't keep your wits during times of calm, what's going to happen when the real troubles break loose, like the Jordan in flood? You think it's hard now, God's trying to say. It's only going to get worse. So buck up. Get moving. I can't use you while you're feeling like that. He goes on to say, yep, even your own family will be against you. But I am with you. And that should make all the difference. Or James goes on to say, and look at Job. Well, after having read Job recently, I wouldn't call him particularly patient. You know, he had a lot of questions. He had a certain amount of frustration with his friends. But he did persevere. He accepted all that happened to him without giving up on God. He did have some questions of God. And even his wife says, why don't you just curse God and die? And he says, as much as saying, woman, haven't you learned anything yet? Because even though he felt that the treatment he got was not fair, he still knew that God was there. And what happened in the end? Yes, he was indeed rewarded. Why? Because the Lord is compassionate and merciful. James says. He cares. In fact, that means we should care about our attitudes as well. Even when everything has gone wrong. I was tempted to share that, you know, that section in the book of Habakkuk that says, now though the fig tree doesn't blossom, though there's no sheep, there's no cattle, there's nothing. I got nothing. May the Lord be blessed anyway. And then the third point I think this passage is telling us is we need to watch our words. It goes back to one of his themes, isn't it? You know, he's got a lot to say about people with loose tongues. You know, the whole loose tongue sinks ships story, isn't it? The tongue and all the troubles that go with it. And for James, he's saying here that if you know God cares, make sure that your language shows it. And anyway, what's wrong with oaths? Well, we've all done it, haven't we? But why? Well, I was trying to work through that. I think, well, maybe it's try because I want to sound impressive. You know, I want to sound like God's on my side. Well, maybe it's a way that I can try to manipulate God to get involved in this situation and do what I want. And maybe our oath shows our impatience with God. And it's an indirect way of trying to hurry him up. Or maybe it's just about sounding pious. Well, what does Jesus have to say about this? Well, in that passage in Matthew 5, verse 33, a bit earlier in that passage, Matthew 5:33. Why can't I find it? Eugene translates it like this. He says, "And don't say anything you don't mean. This counsel is embedded deep within our traditions. You only make things worse when you lay down a smoke screen of pious talk, saying, 'I'll pray for you,' or never doing it or saying it, and never doing it and saying it, 'God be with you,' and not even meaning it. You don't make your words true by embellishing them with religious lace. In making your speech sound more religious, it becomes less true. Just say yes or no. When you manipulate words to get your own way, you go wrong." Well, that's just what James is saying here as well. Look out. If you fail to watch your words, then they may be used against you. So just keep it simple. Simple yes or simple no. And I don't know about you, but I've finally taught my grandchildren that when I say yes or no, I mean yes or no. There's no threats required, no embellishments, no sugarcoating needs to go with it. So, what are you going to do with all that? How are you going to put this into practice? Well, I was trying to work out the best way to end this all off, and I thought, what about this passage that I just happened to be reading in my daily reading this week from Mark's Gospel, chapter 7. And Jesus says, "These people make a big show of saying the right thing, but their heart isn't in it. They act like they are worshipping me, but they don't mean it. They just use me as a cover for teaching whatever suits their fancy, ditching God's command and just taking up the latest fads." You know, maybe that's the way we celebrate Easter. You know, we make it look like we're worshipping, but it's just a 4-day long weekend. It's time for a good time. Or does it signify the very central concept, the very central fact of our belief. He goes on to talk about, well, where does sin come from? Yeah, why is it so sinful to eat the wrong foods? And Jesus says, it's not what you swallow that pollutes your life. It's what you vomit up. That's the real pollution. He says, and the disciples say, we don't get it. And Jesus says, are you being willfully stupid? Don't you see that what you swallow can't contaminate you? It doesn't enter your heart, but your stomach, and works its way through your intestines, and finally is flushed out. He says, that took care of the dietary quibbling. Jesus was saying that all foods are fit to eat. And he went on to say, it's what comes out of a person that pollutes. Obscenities, lust, thefts, murders, adulteries, greed, depravity, deceptive dealings, carousing, mean looks, slander, arrogance, foolishness, all these are vomit from the heart. These are the source of your pollution. For out of the heart a man speaks. So, living by faith requires us to watch our actions, our attitudes, and our words.